Okay, we're back with the Finance Show. It's my co-host, Mike Ingram, strategist at BGC Partners, and Sean Richards, our guest from Not a Yes Man Economics. How are you today, Sean?
Good, thank you.
Right, are you in a better state than the Bank of Japan?
I think so, yes. I think everyone is, aren't they?
Right.
Before we came to the meeting, I sat down and was discussing it with someone, and I thought to myself, what would I do? I'm not often at a loss, but I have to say that from each direction you try and head from where they are now, it looks very, very difficult. The correct road of trying to reverse some of this has the problem that they've done so much. And of course, they're probably likely to try and do some more, as they hinted at a few hours ago. But in reality, it looks pretty much more of the same. Mm. I mean, in some respects, trying to enforce a 10-year bond yield at zero is actually higher than what they had a few short weeks ago.
But what's the game here? I mean, in sort of normal person's language, I mean, is this moving the goalposts? Is this changing the goalposts? Or is this just saying, actually, now we're going to be playing rugby? I mean, what's the analogy?
I think there's an element of shuffling the same pack. If you go through it piece by piece, interest rate's still the same. No real change on that. If you look at QE or QQE, as they call it, actually that's the same, except they're reshuffling the numbers. And that may not be as much as they're trying to imply, because they said before, I think, that the typical maturity they'd buy is 7 to 10 years. Now they're targeting the 10 years, so that's sort of very similar, if not the same. The one change, and it's a very, very odd change, is this issue of them saying they'll push inflation to above 2%, because, of course, they've got nowhere near getting it towards 2% yet. So it's a bit of earth, wind and fire and fantasy about that, I think.
It's a Larry Summers argument, isn't it? Right, if a 2% inflation target doesn't work, have a 3% inflation target. But, I mean, isn't it strange that we spent years, I mentioned this earlier on the show, with central banks through forward guidance et al. Trying to get long-term interest rates lower. Now they don't need help getting long-term interest rates lower, because the idea was, well, if you lower a long-term interest rate, you're going to increase the lower the cost of investment in the real economy. That hasn't happened. Now the idea is, all right, well, you know, with the yield curve flat, then you know, banks' profitability is hit, so the volume of credit isn't there. But it doesn't really matter, because cash isn't pushed out to the real economy in that way, and there's no investment demand from non-financial corporates.
Well, that is a particular problem for Japan in the various methods that it's had. Firms have taken the money in, but it's often been those that don't really need it.
Yeah.
And so this is the problem of trying to get it to the right place. They had several sentences discussing of where it was important to sort of get the money. And I think we're reaching the extremes of fine-tuning here, because first central banks back in the day changed what we call base rate in the UK, then it's now bank rate, the actual short-term rate. Now they've moved out down the curve, Operation Twist, the things that the Bank of England, Federal Reserve, are still doing, taking things longer, just so people understand. Tuesday it was, we bought a gilt to 2068. And, you know, you look at that, depending which way you count it, 50 or 90 million. And so they're going that way. Now we've got the Bank of Japan saying, oh, hang on a minute, we've sort of gone out here, now we're coming back, this is the spot. And it's sort of like the thing, I don't know, older people listening to this might remember the golden shot from years ago, where they upheld
that.
The thing, tried to get it in.
Well, and Aston, yes.
This is what they're doing. At least then there was an actual target, though. The target moves here as well, and I think that creates quite a mess.
I can't remember. I was thinking about the golden
you
shot.
You thought of Anne Aston, and your mind just went blank. I mean, where the Bank of Japan now is, do you think that's where other central banks are likely to end up?
But they seem to be heading that way. And there was another familiar feature, which is the ETF buying for equities is now being pointed, or at least some of it, towards the topics, which has more bank shares in it. So we have something that's bank favourable. It's one of the reasons why Japanese bank shares rallied. I think they were up between 5 and 7% quite quickly. Mm. However, around the world, some of that seems to be wearing off, because I was sent a message earlier saying that Deutsche Bank had hit yet another low, which seems to be almost a sort of echo chamber, doesn't it? Another low Deutsche. My old employer is in quite a bad way. And the sort of goodwill for banks hasn't even got itself out of the sort of UK time mourning.
I mean, I don't really understand how getting a bank share price up actually helps the real economy anyway. I mean, I suppose you could argue that a plummeting bank share price might unnerve depositors and you know, ultimately might cause a run on the bank, maybe. But it's pretty tenuous, isn't it? I mean, why do I care if Nomura is doubled in price? It doesn't mean they're any more active in the Japanese economy. It doesn't mean they're providing more loans. It's totally meaningless.
It does matter for ones that need cash, though. And, of course, there's the irony. They're usually ones that can't. Another one plummeting yesterday was
cash.
Monte dei Paschi of Italy, you know, which, last time I checked, needs to raise 5 times its market cap. Well, the market cap's lower, so it'll be 6 times soon, the way it's going, maybe 7.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter in a low-interest rate environment, does it?
Well, it does when you're looking for equity finance, though, doesn't it? Because they try and slide these bonds in that they'll say are like equity. But in something like that, who's going to buy that amount? You know, it'll be people with other people's money, won't it? Who's going to put their own money in that? Because it's quite obvious what the risks are.
But then, I mean, trying to get back again always to the ordinary analogies here, we've gone on a road, of, you know, 8-year row, which clearly doesn't create inflation. It does the opposite. So all the the tweaking that we've seen, and whatever the Bank of Japan is doing now, it's bad for inflation. It's bad for growth. It doesn't help anybody.
There's various reasons that's caused that. And in essence, in old economics terms, you'd say that velocity's fallen. But it's come across various things like savings, pensions, and areas like that have taken a bite out of the supposed gain.
I mean, that's the thing. That's
and there's nothing left.
Savings, or the interest paid to depositors, was the magic of the post-war period. I mean, that was, you know, people would get 5%, 7% interest, or, you know, on their carefully stored away money, and that would drive the whole economy. People could live off that, and that was the fuel that kept everything going, kept inflation going, and everything else. Because I think it's that thing about I think Einstein was saying that the most perfect thing in the world is compound interest.
Yes, well, there was an example of that in reverse this morning. Because
that creates compound growth. I suppose that creates compound growth.
Well, if you get 0% on a Japanese government bond and they get inflation to 2%, then you lose 2% a year, don't you? Who wants to do that? In a different example, I can talk personally. I got some pension money from one of the banks I work for, and I got a statement a week ago which predicts that I'll get less when I retire than what it's worth now. Who'd put money into that on those terms? It's not a lot, the change down, what was it, £54, but even so that'll be another X years and you have less. Who's going to do that? It destroys these sort of business models, doesn't it? Insurance, pensions.
We're going to try and find somebody and we'll interview them on the show. Sean Richards from Not a Yes Man Economics, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, truckie.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other truckie.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.